This is a podcast for the SBS Emerging Writers Competition. The SBS Emerging Writers Competition invites aspiring writers to share their unique stories, with the winner awarded $5,000 to support the development of their storytelling. Head to sbs.com.au/writers to find out more. Hello and welcome to The New Writers Room, a podcast for emerging writers. My name is Caitlin Chang.
I'm Candice Chung. We're two commissioning editors at SBS Voices. We're here today to talk about all of the things that go into memoir writing.
There should always be a sentence where you instinctually, subconsciously slow down. It's a beautiful sentence. It's a true sentence. It gets you. So if it's getting you, then it's going to get an audience as well.
Now, Candice, before we get into this podcast, I just want to point out how funny it is that we are hosting this together because for so long our careers have intersected and now we work together, but people have often thought we're the same person. They get us mixed up a lot. So it's nice that we can put that rumor to bed and confirm that we're actually two different people.
Yes, we've been getting each other's mail for a while, I think. And even when we were working at completely different publications, I think my favourite thing is when a writer or a colleague I've never met says, "Hey, I've missed working with you," which gives me a lot of false self-belief, I think.
I know, I always get that. Sorry, we're two different people. So Candice, you know, this might seem like a bit of a niche idea for a podcast, but we've launched it in companion to the SBS Emerging Writers Competition, which is very exciting. This competition was launched last year, which is where we saw over 2,000 entries written to the theme of growing up in diverse Australia. This year, our theme is Between Two Worlds, which can mean so many things. So the most exciting news, Candice, is that we have two new judges this year. We have Wiradjuri author Tara June Winch, who won the 2020 Miles Franklin Award for her book, The Yield.
It's super exciting.
She's so amazing. And we've got Behrouz Bashani, a Kurdish-Iranian journalist and author of the multiple award-winning book, No Friend But the Mountains.
You'll be hearing a lot of tips and advice on what makes an excellent piece of memoir. If you're thinking of entering, which we hope you would, we're not saying that this is a cheat sheet, but, you know, tune in.
Tara June Winch is a Wiradjuri writer from New South Wales. In 2020, her novel The Yield won the Prime Minister's Award for Literature, the Miles Franklin Award, and at the New South Wales Premier's Literary Awards, won three titles, the Book of the Year, the Christina Stead Prize for Fiction, and the People's Choice Awards. We're really excited to speak to Tara today. She's joining us all the way from France over Zoom, where she now lives. Well, thank you for joining us today, Tara.
Thanks for having me.
Well, we're speaking to you from France today. And how is life there at the moment?
Life's great. We've got the summer coming up, so everyone's on holidays and I'll be indoors finishing my novel. So I'll be looking out the window, seeing everyone sunbaking and playing and all sorts of stuff. No, it's great. The world's opening up and we're sort of living with COVID now. We're in a new era.
Yep. Does it feel kind of like things are going back to normal or is it a bit more of like a new normal?
It's a new normal. Yeah, there's an acceptance and we're living, you know, side by side. It's within our society now. I think there's a complete understanding of that. So yeah, we're getting on with life, getting on with writing.
That's nice to know because, you know, I'm in lockdown at the moment, so it's good to know that there is light at the end of the tunnel, I suppose, or, you know, life can continue.
Yeah, I think it's light and acceptance as well. You know, I think light comes with the acceptance that we must live with this. Yeah, anyway.
Awesome. And so this year you're judging the competition with your friend, journalist and author Behrouz Bashani, who's currently based in New Zealand. I wanted to ask how you two came to connect.
How did we connect? I think neither of us can actually remember. It was Ubud Writers Festival and I interviewed Behrouz and Omid, his translator, and a couple of other refugee writers. So that's how we met virtually. And then he reached out to ask me my opinion on something fictional that he was writing, I'm sure. Yeah, it was. That's how it was. And then, you know, I just replied and we went back and forth with yeah, both our pieces, and yeah, we're good friends. We chat most days. Yeah, it's nice.
That sounds really lovely to have a creative friendship like that.
They are so important. Yeah, I can't recommend them enough to find someone that you really trust with your work, especially your work that's a work in progress, that isn't polished.
Mm.
Yeah. And especially a friend who, it's different if you're speaking with a publisher or an agent, where it's a sort of, it's almost like you're speaking on business terms, whereas mm-hmm. with a friend you can just speak as sort of a vulnerable, with a vulnerability,
yes.
you know, you're both outside the boat, you haven't got in there yet, and yeah, you're at sea in a way, yeah.
I was going to ask what you and Beirut bonded over, but it sounds like it's fiction.
We talk a lot about both being Indigenous. He's an Indigenous mm-hmm. Kurdish man.
Mm.
And we talk about sort of comparative literature a lot. We talk about walking because we both use walking mm-hmm. as a writing tool.
Mm.
Like all the photos I've shared have been of my dog and he wants more. so we talk about my dog. And we, you know, he's texted me this morning and said, have you read Raymond Carver?
Mm.
So we'll talk about Raymond Carver today. Wow. And I have read Raymond Carver. I love Raymond Carver. But, I mean, whatever our lives and what our goals are, actually. We talk a lot about our sort of hopes and dreams mm-hmm. as writers, our really big ambitions to write something great. Yeah, I think we both bring out ambition in each other. A lot.
How wonderful.
That's great.
Yeah. And so speaking about working with Beirut, what are you looking forward to about judging the Emerging Writers Competition with Beirut?
I think the excitement around the discussion is going to be, or for me, what's exciting, rather, is that, you know, Beirut has only recently really mastered reading fiction in English.
Mm-hmm.
It's because it's his second language or third language, actually.
Mm.
So he brings such a new perspective on the way he's writing in English
mm-hmm.
and the way he's reading English, which is so kind of elemental.
Mm.
So I think, like, having our language differences is actually going to be the most fascinating thing. Like, I can't wait to go through these stories with him in that way. I think on that note as well, it encourages would-be writers, people who are going to enter this competition, if English isn't your first language, to still enter, to still have a go, because Beirut and I, and particularly Beirut, we're going to see the potential in this story. Mm. We're going to see, like, the heart of the heart, the bud of the bud. We're going to see that. We're going to be able to read that, particularly Beirut. Just enter it. Even if you're not confident in your English skills, absolutely put it on the page. You've got a story, write it. You've been thinking about the story, write it and enter, because there's, there's no rules about spelling when we judge.
Yes.
And I think you're both going to inspire a lot of people to enter.
I hope so.
Yeah. And so the topic for this year's competition is Between Two Worlds. So I wanted to know, when you think of that topic, like, what does it mean to you? Like, what kind of ideas does it spark in you?
I mean, that can be interpreted anyway.
Mm, yeah.
You know, but particularly I would like to see, I think we'd both love to see, first generation, second generation Australians, those that have had to be the family translator. I mean, we want to see those new writers and new voices from the diaspora. I mean, we just want to hear, like, a whole story of Australia. We want voices from our multicultural Australia. We want First Nations voices. We want these emerging voices that are going to perhaps have, you know, the greatest literary careers in Australia and internationally. Who knows, you know. The thing is, with the short story form and why these competitions are so important, and I'm not just, like, waxing lyrical, like, that's how my career started, was entering a short story competition.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And the thing is that, this is, quote, all things are created twice.
Mm.
So
beautiful.
Like the mental is the first creation, the visualization, the mental creation, the second creation, which is the physical creation to all things. You can look at it like a carpenter. The blueprint is first created before a hammer even, and so many blueprints before a hammer ever touches a nail. So the same thing happens with writing. This is so important to apply it to writing. And this is why I think short stories are so overlooked, is because potential writers think, oh, no, my ambition is to write a 900-page novel. Why would I even consider the short story?
Mm.
But this is your blueprint. This is where you test the water. You have this opportunity to test the water of the story and to challenge yourself, even to bring that idea into, you know, a couple of thousand words, is a skill that you will be able to apply throughout your writing career. In 2016, actually, you know, I was kicking around with this novel, The Yield, for 10 years. And in 2016, I was asked by Westerly magazine, a big literary magazine in Australia, to submit something for an edition. And I had been so obsessed with writing The Yield, you know, really in a solitary way. I didn't actually have a contract for it. I wasn't talking to anyone about it at that point. But I couldn't think of anything but The Yield. And I needed the money, I know that. So Westerly offered it, you know, a modest fee. And I thought, let's try and contain this into a 5,000-word story for this edition. And I did. You know, it was painstaking, but I did it. And the response from that short story version of the novel back in 2016 was so overwhelming from readers. You know, and it's not like a massive New Yorker or anything. It's our little Australian literary magazine. But it was so overwhelming. Maybe there was only five people that read it and acknowledged me or got in contact. But that's so overwhelming to someone who's just all alone writing a book.
Yeah.
And a publisher actually saw it. So, I mean, without having put those 5,000 words out there, without having taken that risk, I could still be sitting and obsessing and tinkering away on The Yield for sure. Mm. Absolutely. There's no doubt.
That's such good advice. It's amazing. And so when you were an emerging writer and entering short story competitions, and how did you, I guess, find your voice when you were starting out?
I don't think you need to find it. I think you need to do, it's there. It lives inside you. It's the voice at 3 a.m. that's telling you to live a better life. It's all your regret, all your guilt, all your shame. It's that love you can't let go of. It's your first absolutely soul-destroying heartbreak. That's your voice. It's you. It's you as a childhood feeling, you know, injured by something your mother said, or the way your aunt pinched you, or the way someone looked as they left the door. You know, that is your voice. You can you can hear it. It's your internal voice.
And is there anything that you kind of wish that you knew back then when you were starting out that you know now?
Gosh, that's hard. There's so much. I mean, you'd have to categorize it all. Don't talk too much to journalists about your personal life. I mean, read the classics. Don't think you have to put so many beautiful words onto one piece of paper. You know, spread them out. Have one moment on one entire page that kind of gets you yourself in the guts. That you, when you're reading aloud as you're writing your work, which is so important, you have to hear the musicality of the words. But when you're reading aloud and you're going through those pages, there should always be a sentence where you instinctually, subconsciously slow down. It's a beautiful sentence. It's a true sentence. It gets you. So if it's getting you, then it's going to get an audience as well. So those are the things, you know, something you get from an MFA, the craft of being an expert in the human heart and being an expert in conveying a true piece of connection on the page.
Yeah.
There's my regret. And that's the thing that it's okay, because you'll work on it. Your work will get better. Your novels will get better. Yeah.
Yeah. Gosh, how beautiful being an expert on the human heart. It's a big job.
I mean, I think it's a lifelong job, but it's we're all experts on the human heart. You know, that's the point of our lives, to understand and be understood, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. Back to the topic of starting out, I think I read that you wrote a lot of poetry when you were young.
Oh, Lord.
How did you transition from writing poetry to writing prose?
Well, I think actually I used to go to a lot of slam poetry when I was a teenager. I think that's super important because, you can hear that connection with writing and music. It was being in the State Library of Queensland in Brisbane, and I used to go to slam poetry in Fortitude Valley. Mm. This is after I'd returned from London and just gone to Brisbane on a whim. But wherever I'd travelled, I was 18 or 19 at the no, 19 at the time. Wherever I'd travelled, I always went to libraries. One day in the library I saw, and they still run this short story competition actually, Young Writers Award, Queensland Young Writers Award, and I saw it on the community notices for the library. Mm. Write a short story, cash prizes, you know, 1,000 for the winner, 500 for second prize, 18 to 25, I think, the age group was. So I sat down and wrote my first ever short story, which was the first chapter of Swallow the Air, my first book. Wow. I didn't win. I won second prize, which was just as good as me. Yeah. To me. And exactly 12 months later, actually during the Queensland Literary Awards, they were the Premier's Awards then, they invited the winner and myself to come just to the lobby during the prize ceremony and to pick up our $1,500 checks, which was huge, huge.
Wow.
And then 12 months later, it was a bit of a long serendipitous sort of journey from there. Not long, actually, short. 12 months later, I won the manuscript award at the same Queensland Literary Awards.
Wow.
So within 12 months from that first short story, I had a publishing contract for a book. And that's because one of the judges – sorry, now I'm going on a tangent.
No, keep going.
That's because
love it.
One of the judges – so I got the 500, very happy to go to the lobby at a literary awards. Wow. And then actually it encouraged me to go back to school because I dropped out just after year 10. So it gave me actually a confidence boost to get second prize. Mm. And I went back and I ended up going down to Southern Cross Uni in Lismore to study Indigenous Studies. And I was so, like, it was exciting. I had something on my CV. Mm. And then I sort of forgot about it. And then I was contacted by an editor at University of Queensland Press who had been given my short story, without me knowing, on a hunch, by Nick Earls, the famous writer, who was a judge on the prize.
Wow. So
then she, of course, there was 8 weeks until the close of the David Yonayapon Award, and she rang me every single day and just pushed me to expand that first short story into a manuscript.
That's amazing.
Like, there's more stories here, Tara. What is it? And I was crying on the phone every day for those 8 weeks saying, I can't do it. And she just pushed me. It was amazing. And then we did it, and we're still all friends.
Oh, so, that's great.
Oh, what a lovely story. But the point is, not only do you not know, even if you don't win this prize, even if you aren't a runner-up, even if you don't get contacted by a publisher after you win or you're a runner-up and someone reads your work, you don't know what Beirut and I are going to do with that story.
Yeah.
You don't know who we're going to tell, really.
Yeah.
There is just everything to gain from entering this prize.
Wow.
And absolutely nothing to lose, because you're going to keep practicing your craft, and that is how you become a great writer, to practice your craft. Mm.
Yeah.
What I really loved from what you said earlier was that, you know, you described the importance of being a good listener as well as a good reader if you wanted to write well, which I thought was such like an inspiring and like interesting thing to like try to master. I wonder if you had like a favorite storyteller growing up, like someone
who inspired you in that way to love to listen to stories?
Well, I guess would be my father. He tells the like most ridiculous, funniest stories, and he's never read a book in his life. He's a storyteller. That's something he's inherited, that's in his blood. He'd go away to the bush when I was a kid to fruit picking or cattle stations to get work and then come back home for, you know, months on end. And he always had stories. And we had a fire pit in our backyard, and it was a place where we all talked, and you didn't have to look into each other's eyes. You looked into the flames, you know. That was your pause in your story, where you were turning your head and breathing into the kindling. And what you do when you read your story aloud and when you hone it, when you edit and you read it again and again and again, is you become, your work becomes the fire pit reflected in your eyes.
You know? That's so great. You spoke earlier about, you know, reading Raymond Carver with Beirut. What are some of your other authors that, you know, you love reading, or what are some of your literary influences?
Look, there's so many great writers out there. Someone like Joan Didion, if you're looking overseas, mine was, in my writing, it was Ujiru Ninokul, who wrote We Are Going in 1964, was the first Aboriginal female writer to be published. So remember that our writing, published writing, began in really, well, the first Aboriginal writer to be published after David Unipon. So remember our writing for First Nations writers, you know, it's relatively new, but it's so deep and rich, and there's such, there's a lot out there that is not in print at the moment, or is, you're going to have to go to the library for it, but you'll find it. So our writing really exploded as a response to the civil rights movement in America in the 1960s and 1970s, 1980s. Wow, we have a lot of writing to draw from. We have a backlog, and it's such a rich backlog. So if there's a First Nations writer out there and that is looking for that voice of our ancestors that have come before, that voice of our literary ancestors that has come before, is like reaching out at the beginning of their trajectory through our writing, then I would say to reach out to Ujiru Ninokul's work. Her poetry remains some of the best poetry in Australia, and that says a lot because we have the best poets in the world, I think, here.
I wanted to ask you about The Yield, which, as you said, kind of 10 years in the making. And then once it was released, it received, you know, so many accolades. How did that feel to kind of have that book recognised with such success?
I mean, everything is twofold. So on one hand, all I ever wanted in my career, which is 15 years, is a readership. You know, that's a real hard thing to come by, especially for literary writers who are publishing with indies. And the history that the publishing industry and the, you know, readership, commercial readership has had with First Nations writers, POC writers, it's a hard thing to get a readership. And so on the one hand, it was the most extraordinary, beautiful, magical thing ever to happen in my life, because I actually feel as if I have a readership now. It's incredible. And I'm so, so, so grateful. And not just a readership that is following what the newsletter says we should read this month, book of the month, but then the newsletter being, you know, any kind of person, media, whatever thing telling you what to read. It's readers that have gone, I didn't acknowledge that white Australia has a black history. I was never taught that. And even if I was never taught, I never tried to push to really find out. I have no idea about my country that I live on, this country, one of 250 within Australia. I pay no respects to the custodians of this land. Terra Nullius was a lie. You know, all this, they have a depth and understanding. We're in communion now because something in my book has made them look elsewhere, or something in the book before they read my book has linked the two important viewpoints, subjects together, and they've gone out into the world to be part of a true whole Australia, which is not actually revering the past but understanding it really. So, yeah, there's a truth-telling in this writing community, that this community of readers, this readership that I have, that's, you know, it's priceless. But on the other hand, it's a heavy baton that I'm glad to be passing on soon to the next Miles Franklin winner.
Yeah.
You know, I'm not good at emails and I get a lot these days.
Right.
So, Tara, you've been based in France for a while now, and you've been talking a little bit about writing about home. How does being overseas, or like being at, you know, separated with this distance, affect the way you write about home?
You know, actually, I think it's a positive thing in a way, because what ends up on the page is all that longing, is all those burnt memories. You're not distracted by, you know, the nuance of what Australia is or what happened or the way the light hits a tree and stuff like that. I can't then be distracted by, if I was in Australia, I'd be distracted by all those trees all the time walking down the street, or all those conversations would be just as significant as that one that is the gold in the pan.
So just kind of back to the competition, why is it so important to support emerging writers, do you think?
Well, first of all, when we say emerging writers, it's really important to recognise that you can be an emerging writer at 60.
Yeah.
And I would encourage it. You know, you've lived a full long life. You've got a lot more perspective on the world than a 19-year-old that hasn't really got past the confession stage of the story. So I really encourage all ages, particularly senior citizens. Like, I want a story by a senior citizen. Particularly our elders. Yeah, we're not going to discriminate by age, don't worry, it's a blind judging. But we want to hear from you. You can be an emerging writer at any age.
Mm. And do you have any more advice for First Nations and culturally diverse writers in particular who are hoping to enter?
Don't worry if you have never written a story before. Don't worry if you've never written it down. Don't worry if you think that there should be a paragraph there. It's very postmodern not to use any grammar at all. So go, just put it on the page. Don't be scared that there are rules that you're supposed to follow, because for sure, Bayrouz and I aren't looking at that. We're looking for heart and truth and, you know, just a good yarn. So please, please. And as I said before, if English isn't your first language, it does not matter. Write it. You can do it yourself. You don't need your grandchildren to write it, to take your story. You do it. Or if you are the grandchild, tell us that story as well. But please, 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 just like inundate us, flood us with stories. Yeah. We're ready for it.
Lastly, what would you personally like to see more of in the publishing industry to elevate and promote Indigenous storytelling?
We need Indigenous First Nations editors on staff at publishing houses. We need a sort of hot desk for publishers to go to learn about, and that might be with the Australia Council or another body, to have information for cultural protocols, intellectual property. We need a publishing industry that is more responsible, that is more culturally sensitive and intelligent. We need this competition like this, honestly, because this is the stepping stone. And if this is on the radio, it is on the radio, I hope. Or if it's not, I'll go and get on the radio, regional radio, because we need stories from all over Australia if we are going to tell the whole story of this country. That's the number one. And we need not just the opportunities like this, but also the apprenticeship, the art of the apprenticeship, the art of supporting writers, in their craft and also emotionally in their mental health with any support they need, you know, and sort of walking them through the process of the industry so it doesn't seem so daunting and exclusive, because it really shouldn't. Mm. Because at the end of the day, we just want to hear books that tell the true, whole and varied story of Australia.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Mm. Mm. Well, Tara, I think you've inspired a lot of people to enter. I honestly think we're going to be inundated, which is a good thing.
Yeah, I'll have to... Beirut and I will have to rack up our fee if there's like thousands.
Yeah. You're going to regret saying that.
Edit out that fee thing.
Yeah. I honestly think you've really inspired a lot of people. And yeah, thank you so much for talking to us. It's been wonderful.
Thanks so much for having me, Candace and Caitlin. And fingers crossed that we get lots of entries. Good luck, everyone.
Thanks so much,
Thanks,
Tara.
Thanks, Tara.
And that's it for today. Next episode, we're going to talk to the winner of the 2020 SBS Emerging Writers Competition, Alana Hicks.
At a certain point, you do have to reconcile how you see yourself and how society sees you. And sometimes there is a bit of a disconnect between that.
The New Writers Room is produced by Caitlin Chang and Candace Chung and edited and mixed by Jeremy Wilmot. Our executive producers are Natalie Hambley and Danielle Teutsch. You can find SBS Voices on Facebook or on Twitter. Entries for the SBS Emerging Writers Competition close on September 16th, and you can find out more by heading to sbs.com.au/writers. And if you'd like to pitch a story to SBS Voices, you can email voices@sbs.com.au. The official anthology of the 2020 SBS Emerging Writers Competition is out now at all good bookshops. Roots, Home is Who We Are, published by Hardy Grant Books in partnership with SBS, features 30 of the best entries to inspire you to get writing.